Good afternoon. My name is Tiffany, and I will be your conference facilitator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Frontier Community Health Integration Project Demonstration Webinar. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. You may also submit your question at any time during the presentation by typing your question into the Adobe Connect chat pod and pressing submit. Thank you. Stephen Johnson, you may begin your conference.
Hello, and welcome to the Frontier Community Health Integration Project Demonstration, Webinar 2, Budget Neutrality and Savings Examples. Today, you'll hear from myself, Stephen Johnson, Sid Mazumdar, and Paul Moore. We are very excited again for this demonstration to present to you what budget neutrality is and how your projections will inform our review of your applications. We will also go over some scenarios of how applications can actually work. Next slide. We'll start with just with simple housekeeping. In submitting the application, applications must be submitted in a Microsoft Word or PDF format. Applications must be typed in 12-point font and 1-inch margins. Applications should not exceed 40 double-spaced pages, not including cover letter, executive summary, forms, and supporting documentation. The application should include a cover letter, the Medicare waiver demonstration applicant data sheet, which is located on the FCHIP webpage on the CMS webpage, on the CMS website, executive summary, problem statement, the demonstration design, organizational structure and capabilities, performance results, payment methodology and budget neutrality, demonstration implementation plan, as well as supplemental materials. Next slide. Again, Section 123 of the Medicare Improvement for Patients and Providers Act of 2008 requires a demonstration to be budget neutral. It provides, in conducting a demonstration project under this section, the Secretary shall ensure that the aggregate payments made by the Secretary shall not exceed the amount which the Secretary estimates would have been paid if the demonstration project under this section was not implemented. Next, you will hear from Paul Moore, who is our resident ex-COD administrator. Paul?
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate that. It's my privilege today to be with you and to look at a few possible scenarios within the FCHIP demonstration where we could be making the case for budget neutrality once with each of the four waivers. Now, we just want to say up front, we recognize that the folks in the field, the boots on the ground, are where the experts reside. And so we invite you to personalize and make these scenarios true to your community and to be sure that you put forth the best case you can in the application. So as we look at the next slide, the first application that I would want to look at with these four waivers would be the telemedicine application on slide 7. This involves a payment waiver. And what you have here is a Frontier Critical Access Hospital would like to provide telemedicine services to the patients in their community. However, the costs involved, for instance, the staff's administrative time to coordinate with the specialist office and schedule a telemedicine appointment, or staff time for the nurse to be present with the patient while participating in a telemedicine consult, costs like monthly fees involved with telemedicine equipment, billing, and other costs, those costs involved make it a losing proposition financially under the current payment methodology. And as a result, local patients needing access to a specialist are forced to schedule their specialty care visits and travel to the distant specialist, where while they're there, they may even seek other primary care services. This is likely to increase the overall cost of Medicare for the beneficiaries, and that's the basis of our case for budget neutrality in the payment waiver allowing in telemedicine both the cost-based reimbursement of the facility costs incurred and also the technology of storing forward to provide us a better, more convenient way, both for the patient and the provider. Now, as we look at slide 8 and we talk about the ambulance payment waiver, another possible scenario would be that a Frontier Critical Access Hospital is within 35 miles of a volunteer ambulance service that only provides basic life support, or BLS. And because this critical access hospital is located within 35 miles of this other service, it is not currently eligible to receive cost-based reimbursement for its advanced life support, or ALS, ambulance service. And because of this, it's having a difficult time financially supporting this higher level of service or advanced life support ambulance services due to the cost of transporting high-risk patients and the combination of the current low reimbursement. Now, the opportunity for FCHIP is through the Frontier Cause calculation that cost-based reimbursement will be sufficient with its current volume of patients to maintain ambulance services and preserve access to the advanced life support level of service in its community, possibly preventing avoidable air transfers to distant tertiary facilities that would be more costly. Now, I want to go back just a moment back to the telemedicine scenario that we talked about. If we could go back to slide 7. What you see here, the opportunity through FCHIP in this application is that providing telemedicine services through the Critical Access Hospital, which will result in better coordinated patient-centered access to specialty services at the local place with the opportunity for more cost-efficient care and potentially fewer hospital admissions and readmissions. In addition to reducing the travel burden on the beneficiary, it would also be anticipated that there would be fewer transfers to tertiary hospitals for patients who are able to access specialty care in their hometown hospital via telemedicine, resulting in lower overall health care costs for the beneficiaries. So both in this telemedicine application, the case for budget neutrality could be made that when you can provide that care locally, you're avoiding transportation costs, you're avoiding transfer costs, and you're providing better patient-centered care there. The same as we look at slide 8 is in ambulance. Whenever you can have the higher level of services in the local community and you're meeting the needs of those Medicare beneficiaries in that community, then you are avoiding more costly care upstream, more costly transfers, possibly even an air transfer, simply because the level of service required is not there under a voluntary system. Now, as we look at slide 9, I want to look at the condition of participation waiver that is offered in the FCHIP demonstration, and that is in increasing the critical access hospital bed limit from 25 beds to 35 beds for the purpose of accommodating long-term care. Now, a scenario might be that a Frontier Critical Access Hospital provides nursing facility level services to, say, an average of 20, 22 patients. But because the nearest nursing home is over 50 miles away, the Critical Access Hospital often has a waiting list of additional 5 to 10 patients, local patients, who prefer to receive their nursing home care in their own community. Now, because the facility once had a nursing home, there would be no additional construction needed to expand the current capacity of 35 beds. Now, as we look at this condition of participation waiver, the opportunity through the FCHIP here is that the Critical Access Hospital anticipates that the expanded bed capacity from 25 to 35 beds will meet the unmet nursing home needs of the community members without having to incur any additional construction costs. In addition, this intervention will lower the overall cost per patient by spreading that fixed overhead cost over a larger number of patients, therefore making the case for budget neutrality and possibly even savings in this particular scenario. And next, as we look at slide 10 and the payment waiver around the home health piece in the FCHIP demonstration project, we see that, you know, in these communities, there may have been a time when home health was provided in the Frontier community, but due to any number of reasons that could be offered, is no longer available currently. And, in fact, the nearest home health agency may be 50, 60 miles away. Now, a critical access hospital in the Frontier community would like to provide home health services to patients in their local outlying areas. However, one identified reason the hospital is unable to provide home health services is due to the current reimbursement being insufficient to cover the longer distance and the travel time of healthcare professionals taking care of these patients in more remote frontier settings. So the opportunity for the community through the FCHIP payment waiver would be that with the mileage add-on, the critical access hospital will be able to directly provide or possibly contract for home health services to help maintain their community's frail elderly residents in their home as a means to prevent early admission into long-term care. In addition, given the isolation factor and the weather challenges, the Critical Access Hospital believes that providing home health services would also reduce the overall cost of care by decreasing the opportunity for visits to the emergency department, by avoiding unnecessary hospitalizations and readmissions, and in this way making the case for budget neutrality under the home health scenario. So in each one of these waivers, be it a payment waiver or the condition of participation waiver, the applicant needs to put forth a solid story showing how that savings can be generated, how care can be improved, how it becomes more personal, more patient-centered care, and that outcomes are improved, better care is given in a more cost-efficient, effective way because it's done locally. Now I'd like to hand the presentation over to my colleague Sid Mazumdar to further talk about and flesh out this idea of budget neutrality. Sid?
Okay, thank you very much, Paul, and I really have to commend Paul for his presentation. For the providers and beneficiaries who participate in CMS demonstrations and for the staff and managers who work on them, budget neutrality is often regarded as the spinach that you have to eat to get the goals done that you want for the communities. But I think Paul really did a great job in showing that what we're after is to really improve the care of patients and support the communities in providing their care. So if you look at slide 12, I'll extend that to explain how budget neutrality helps the Innovation Center and the larger CMS implement models, and CMS is very committed to models on rural health care. As well as being a congressional requirement for the FCHIP demonstration, the goal of being cost-effective is important to rural health policy. As we outline on this slide, budget neutrality impacts future rural health policy. It ensures that the Medicare program is a prudent payer. And furthermore, it helps policymakers in analyzing how to be effective in the clinical and financial approaches to healthcare delivery. And when you think about applying to the FCHIP demonstration, we know you have the interests of your hospitals, your providers, your beneficiaries, and your communities at heart, but we really want to engage you in ongoing work that will create new models and enhance and stimulate thought on how to serve rural healthcare throughout the United States. Next slide. For the FCHIP demonstration, only individual critical access hospitals can apply. As outlined in the solicitation, critical access hospitals must show in their applications linkages to community providers. The budget neutrality analysis must be conducted for each application. This analysis should be based on the pattern of clinical care for Medicare patients among all providers who provide services to them. That is, the budget neutrality analysis should detail the services and the cost of those services to Medicare for the healthcare providers in the community, and as well for the tertiary providers to which the patients might travel. And we understand that this account will necessarily be an estimate, but it should be an informed estimate, an estimate based on historical experience, including actual recorded provision of services within the past few years among the community and tertiary providers. Next slide. The applicant must be a critical access hospital with linkages to community providers. Applicants may select any or all of the four intervention prongs, the critical access hospital bed expansion, telemedicine, ambulance, home health. Applicants must submit a budget neutrality estimate for each one of its selected prongs. And applicants should engage and think about reasonable assumptions as to the cost of avoided Medicare services. For example, the cost of a hospital stay that wouldn't happen or transpire because due to this intervention, there's better care within the community. Next slide. CMS is requesting the following information for each intervention prong selected: the total number of Medicare cases per year, the total Medicare cost and Medicare cost per case, the total number and percentage of cases that will be transferred, the total number and percentage of transfers, hospitalizations, or other Medicare costs that will be avoided. A general, solid, but somewhat maybe also intuitive explanation of why these transfers, hospitalizations, or how they will be avoided, transfers, hospitalizations, or other Medicare costs, why they won't be happening for the patients that start out in the community. And then finally, the estimate, the total estimate of Medicare cost savings. And I'll talk a little bit more about how we get there. Next slide. So I'll give you a few seconds to digest and take a look at this slide. So to understand the concept of budget neutrality, this slide lays out the basic concerns. In the left-hand column, we identify the waiver. The applicant can select any or all of the interventions: telemedicine, ambulance, the critical access hospital bed expansion, or home health. And as I said, there must be a separate budget neutrality analysis specific to each of these interventions selected. To understand the next two columns, the two with the headings with demonstration and without demonstration, it might be useful to think of these as two ledgers, separate ledgers side by side. One, the one with demonstration, records the cost to Medicare to services to patients with the specific demonstration intervention. This is the Medicare cost for the entire healthcare system, including community and more distant tertiary facilities. The column or ledger on the right shows the cost for Medicare patients, similarly within the entire health system, without the demonstration. This is the status quo, as if no intervention were implemented. In both scenarios, we show the Medicare cost of existing services, those that are not affected by the demonstration. How budget neutrality is supposed to work is that the demonstration will allow Medicare revenue for new services, but the incremental cost to Medicare are offset by reductions in transfers and hospitalizations in tertiary facilities. Therefore, in the with demonstration column, we see the additional cost to Medicare. These are potentially for this project: the telemedicine, cost-based payment for telemedicine originating site, and we expect a net out, a minus of the existing fees, cost-based ambulance payment, minus the payment from the existing fee schedule, cost-based payment for additional critical access hospital beds, and the per-mile payment for home health. And then at the bottom of that column, to offset that, the reduction in Medicare costs for transfers to and hospital stays within tertiary facilities. The upshot is that the total Medicare cost with the demonstration should not exceed what the cost to Medicare would be without the demonstration. Slide 17, next slide. So in the next set of slides, I'll go through these all carefully. We break down the calculation into a set of step-by-step instructions. Remember, the amounts will be estimates, but they should be based on records maintained of the actual experience of services to providers within the community, as well as to the most distant facilities. So here, for steps 1, 2, and 3, just starting off, step 1, the applicant needs to identify the intervention prong. Step 2, also identify with a certain educated estimate the number of Medicare cases affected by each intervention prong. And step 3, identify with the best information you have. This could be from Medicare claims, from your medical records, the clinical conditions associated with these cases. Next slide. So to continue, we look at the Medicare cost associated with the intervention prong. This is step 4. And I'm going to break out the cost that is added, the benefit to the provider, the cost to Medicare for each of the intervention prongs. For telemedicine, the cost of the intervention is associated Medicare staffing costs and associated Medicare overhead costs, and there should be a minus for the number of affected cases by the Medicare originating site facility fee. There will not be a double payment of that facility fee along with a cost-based payment for the originating site. Next slide. We keep going. For ambulance, the cost of staffing and other items that might be subject to cost-based reimbursement minus the number of affected cases times the Medicare fee schedule payment for additional transports. Again, we will operationalize that, so the payment will be based on cost, but there won't be an additional payment for the fee schedule. The critical access bed expansion, this is more straightforward. There's no netting out of cost of a already being paid cost. This would be the additional Medicare cost of expansion in the number of beds, the reimbursement based on a cost-based methodology that will accrue to the hospital for serving nursing patients, additional nursing patients within the facility. And finally, the home health. This is very straightforward. The number of affected cases times the average number of miles traveled per case times the additional Medicare payment per mile. Next slide. So looking at step number 5, this I think everybody will agree is the more challenging part of this analysis. But we ask you to do your best in thinking through this and defending the assumptions you make. Determine the offsetting savings to Medicare from averted transfers and hospitalizations. For affected cases for each intervention prong, it's the number of averted transfers times the Medicare cost per transfer. I think the critical access hospitals will have access to data on how much is being paid by Medicare for an ambulance visit, for an air ambulance visit, and so forth. But in addition, we're looking at avoided hospitalizations, the number of averted hospitalizations times the Medicare cost per hospitalization. And in most cases, that will be a DRG payment. Next slide. And then the final comparison is to look at step 4, which is the cost to Medicare and the benefit to the providers of the additional revenue coming in as a result of the demonstration, and step 5, the cost, the averted costs that are the offsetting savings as a result of the demonstration. And we need to make sure that that step 4 is not any greater than step 5, that these balance each other out. So to wrap this up, I'm sure that many of you are saying to yourselves that this exposition leaves more questions than answers, but we urge you not to be abashed and to approach the application with the interests of your providers and community in mind. The foremost goal of the FJ project is to support the provision of healthcare services within small towns, to allow providers to keep their patients, Medicare and otherwise, within the community to the extent that it is safe and appropriate for the patients. To this end, CMS needs to document the clinical nature of these cases and the financial as well as social benefit of keeping the patients close to home. You might be thinking, you might have these questions. How do we know what is the cost savings from averted hospitalizations at the larger hospital that might be 40 miles away? And how do we know how many visits to that hospital will be avoided? Indeed, how do we know how many patients are now bypassing the local critical access hospital and going to the tertiary hospital? We ask that you examine the data and knowledge that you have and make reasonable assumptions. Above all, be accurate and reasonable in your forecast and show that you have based them on some recorded experience, whether it be from Medicare claims, a community needs assessment, data from a state office or agency or consultant. You will tell a story about the nature of healthcare in your community and meeting patients' needs, but we need this account to be more than anecdotes. Please provide some numerical evidence. Above all, be accurate and objective. The story you tell needs to be consistent with the numbers that are presented. Think about the data. Think about all the sources of information that are available to you and merge them into the account of how patients are being treated and served in your community and how they can be better treated. Next slide. So with that, I turn the presentation back over to Stephen Johnson, and he'll give a brief introduction before we go on to more questions.
Okay, thanks, Sid. First, I'd like to thank both Sid and Paul for the presentation, and we also want to thank you for the questions you guys have submitted thus far. We have inclement weather here in Baltimore, Maryland, and we're all working remotely. That being the case, we may not be able to get to every question today, unfortunately, but we will put the questions into an FAQ for the questions that we received today. Please feel free to reach out to us via the FCHIP mailbox at fchip@cms.hhs.gov or to me personally at stephen.johnson@cms.hhs.gov, and we will certainly provide you with an answer to your questions. We will start with a few of the FAQs we have so far, which will be posted on the FCHIP webpage in the next couple of days. First, we have one of the questions we will respond to is, how does this demonstration propose to increase access to care for beneficiaries in frontier communities? We are aware that COGS are the hub for healthcare activities in frontier communities. We are proposing to increase access by enhancing local services, both hospital and community-based, at these COGS. An explicit goal of the demonstration is to enhance the patient experience by supporting delivery alternatives so as to allow individuals to remain within communities for their healthcare needs. Another question we've received pretty frequently is, will the FCHIP demonstration allow for the development of inpatient psychiatric services, as well as is there room within the long-term care provision to provide geriatric psychiatry? This demonstration does not allow for the development of an inpatient psychiatric unit, as well as no type of inpatient psychiatric services can be provided in a long-term care provision. However, the telemedicine prong can address mental health issues in the affected communities. Will the FCHIP demonstration be able to support existing services that are operating on a marginal financial basis at the time or only for new added services? The FCHIP demonstration identifies specific prongs for enhanced reimbursement. The goal is to support delivery of all needed services to Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries, including both existing and the new services specified in the solicitation. I will turn it back over to the operator so that we can do the proper protocol. Operator?
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. If you would like to ask a question via the web, you may do so by typing your question into the Adobe Connect chat pod. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
So one of the questions that we have received in the chat itself came from the Montana Hospital Association. Thank you. The first question is, will CMS require state Medicaid agency to request Medicaid waivers or amend the state plan through a state plan amendment if they agree to participate with an FCHIP hospital? As provided in the application materials itself, the hospitals need to work closely with their state Medicaid agency. If that requires the submittal of a state plan amendment, that we do encourage it. We here are also working with the federal side of the Medicaid agency to ensure that we have the waivers and state plans needed in order to make it possible for participation in the demonstration. Another question we received from Ms. Kaminka was, one of the criteria listed for participation is having been a rural hospital flexibility program grantee, yet previous grantees seem to be state public health departments. Can you explain? That's a great question. According to Section 123D1B, little I, it provides in part that those eligible for the demonstration have to be a part of the rural hospital flexibility grantee. This is legislative authority. We also received a question from Nancy Roseanne regarding the Cobb bed expansion, asking, does this include patients regarding Medicare? I would like to forward this question to Sid Mazumdar to answer.
Could Stephen, could you identify the question exactly?
The question is, does the Cobb bed extension include skilled patients regarding Medicare, skilled nursing patients for Medicare?
Yes, it does. The bed expansion for critical access hospitals will be open to both Medicare and Medicaid as payers for the patients who will receive their services from the facility using those beds, and the payment and the requirements for the payment, that the patient be of a certain category, will not change. So it will be Medicare requirements for Medicare, the skilled nursing, and Medicaid requirements for the Medicaid payments. The change that is happening is that the critical access hospital will be allowed to employ more beds up to the limit of 35. That is the waiver for the demonstration. And again, as Stephen has pointed out, we are working closely, and we expect the facility to work closely with the state Medicaid agency, and we are working with the licensure divisions within the states and with our counterparts in the Center for Clinical Standards and Quality within CMS. Stephen?
Thanks, Sid. Another question that we have, actually it seems as if people were not clear about the answer to Ms. Kabinka's question. We are not necessarily sure why you have to be a part of the Rural Hospital Flexibility Program grantee. This was just legislative requirements under Section 123 of MIPA. Perhaps Paul Moore could explain in further detail about more of what it means to be a Rural Hospital Flex grantee. Paul?
Thank you, Stephen. I do want to explain the nuance in this. The language in the legislation did reference the Rural Hospital Flexibility Program. As far as hospitals go, that means critical access hospitals. And so for the purposes of this demonstration, the definition of being part of the Rural Hospital Flexibility Program is being a critical access hospital. And so along with the other eligibility criteria that was involved in the demonstration, the first one is you start by being a critical access hospital, and then you get into the other eligibility criteria. That's what's meant by being part of the FLEX program. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Paul. The other question that we would like to answer that came through a chat is from Gerald Ackerman. So in reporting impact costs, it will be up to each facility to identify potential transfers. In the case of telemedicine, this will be difficult to do. Could you please give some clarification on the level of care provided? Each service could potentially avoid a travel cost or transfer cost. Does cost savings to patients matter, or just CMS transfers? Would you like to take that question, Sid?
First of all care to all patients matters. for the budget neutrality calculation, because it is CMS and because we're responding to a particular legislation, the focus is on Medicare costs. I think we have to work with you in more detail. You can talk to Stephen and talk to me. We'll broadcast all deeper thoughts and analysis of this in Q&As on the website. All situations are different, and we understand that it's difficult sometimes to really nail down what is going to be averted due to a particular intervention. We are idealistic that it can be done, that those benefits to the community and to the Medicare program can be isolated, and we'd like to engage in more deeper conversation. I really don't feel comfortable in shooting on the hip from that right now.
Thanks, Ed. We've received another question that we would like to answer now, and is that in regards to providing technical assistance in developing your applications? We here at CMS will not be able to provide any technical assistance that we cannot offer to everybody. However, you should please feel free to look at our frequently asked questions to answer any questions that you may have. We would also be interested in hearing from you all about another possible webinar that we can offer to everyone that may provide any further clarity that you may need in writing your applications. We want to make sure that the demonstration is open and fair to all. This is the reason why we're not able to offer any one-on-one assistance at CMS. Can we go to the phone line for any other questions, operator?
There are no questions in queue over the phone at this time.
Okay. Another question that we have came from the Hospital Association, the Montana Hospital Association. If the COB beds are expanded, should the facility estimate total number of days and diluted cost per day for Medicare as part of budget neutrality? Sid, if you don't mind, I would like you to answer that question, and we will also provide an FAQ for this in further detail. Sid?
We're learning about cost reporting for critical access hospitals, and we've engaged the cost reporting division within CMS, and there is a learning curve that is going on. I think the hospitals and their financial staff understand the situation better, so as much information as you can give us will be helpful. Please lay out all perspectives of what the cost is and what the cost savings are, and really make clear what is the basis of the analysis and what are the assumptions. What is the cost reporting methodology? The goal is to help the community. The goal is to make it a financially attractive situation for the hospital, and the goal is to save Medicare money. So anything that you can bring in, as long as it's well identified and very clear what the basis of the assumption is, will be helpful.
Thank you, Sid. Another question came in regarding the Medicare Rural Health Flexibility Grantees list. We will provide this list on the FAQ, and which will be up in the next couple of days. It is located on the HRSA's website, HRSA.gov. Another question that we have received is, if a hospital no longer has a home health agency, will they need to reapply and become a COB-owned home health agency? The solicitation requires applicants to provide evidence for linkages, either ownership or contractual, with the providers of these additional services, example, nursing facility, home health agency, ambulance service. We recommend potential applicants check with their state or local licensure agency for the requirements for licensure as a home health agency as appropriate. It is acceptable to contract with a nearby home health agency for providing services for your community, provided it is acceptable under current law. Once again, are there any questions via the phone, operator?
We have no audio questions at this time.
Okay. Another question we have, for EMS services, will the actual cost of avoiding an unavoidable transfer be cost-based? The answer is yes. The cost for services rendered for unavoidable transfers will still be paid through the cost-based methodology. Now, in regards to the question we just received, what is the expected decision date and start date for this waiver program? Sid, would you like to answer that one? I think that we are, I'll start off, I think that we are still, we're going to wait to receive all the applications, and we are currently working with the various state Medicaid agencies. We're going to start working with the state Medicaid agencies in conjunction with you all to give them a heads up that we will hopefully allow for, that we will be putting in for some waivers for the critical access hospital bed expansion. If you'd like to add anything onto that, please feel free.
Sure. The due date for applications is in early May. We will fast-track the selection process, the analysis that has to go up through the administration here in the Baltimore-Washington area. These applications will be reviewed by experts in rural health policy within the government, and there's a lot of interest from our managers to get this moving quickly. So we expect the selections to be announced by July, probably late July. As we speak, we're also working on the systems and operational side that's going to implement the payment changes for this demonstration. So when we're talking about increasing a home health payment rate, cost-based payment for telehealth, cost-based payment for ambulance, those changes will be made through the Medicare administrative contractor, the MAC, that is currently making payments for those provider types, and we expect to have the document that governs that changes, known in CMS parlance as a change request, ready and implemented by October 1st. So we expect the go-live date for this demonstration to be October 1st. That's certainly what we're shooting for, and at this point we have no reason to think that that date will slip. That said, we recognize that the one prong of the bed expansion for the critical access hospitals will require extra work within the government, within both state and federal entities, to have those conditions of participation approved. So it is highly likely that the approval of that specific prong would be delayed past October 1st, and we expect reasonably that could be accomplished by early in 2015.
Thank you, Sid. We just received another question and asking, why is CMS requiring budget neutrality for each prong? This is extremely puzzling since the original FCHIP project recommended budget neutrality for pods of frontier costs, not even individual costs, let alone one prong. According to legislation, there is a strict budget neutrality requirement. This is not necessarily just CMS's rule. This was legislatively mandated to us that the entire project itself has to be budget neutral. Therefore, we're asking each particular applicant to make the best judgment as possible, as well as to make the best story as possible in explaining that their project will be budget neutral through each of the prongs that we have. Sid, since he did present on the budget neutrality, if you would have anything further to add to that, please do.
Yeah, I would definitely like to add to that. I recognize the concern of the questioner as far as interpreting the intent of the statute, but we as analysts within the Innovation Center have to really parse out budget neutrality for the applicants and what the intervention is. We really have to track the dollars and what the difference is. We are not getting a pass on this from the administration. This has gone up to the Office of Management and Budget. And that is why we need to have as much detail as possible and really be able to have the information on each prong.
That is correct. Thank you, Sid. We have another question in regards, can visiting nurse programs be substituted in the home health prong? This is one of the FAQs, and unfortunately, this demonstration focuses on the delivery of home health services that are co-owned and operated. Therefore, visiting nurse service expansion will not be reimbursed under this demonstration. Are there any calls on the line, operator?
As a reminder, to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to ask a question via the web, you may do so by typing your question into the Adobe Connect chat pod.
Hi, Pat. This session is recorded, and will be made available on the CMS webpage. Please look for it in the coming weeks. Once again, if anyone has any questions, I think that we will wait a couple more minutes for some questions to come in, and the other questions that we receive will be answered through the one of the FAQs. One of the questions that we have is, how will the demonstration project be evaluated? This is a great question. We are currently working with one of our colleagues here in the CMS and CMMI, who will be soliciting an RFP for an evaluation contract to determine whether or not the projects have been budget neutral, as well as help to inform our report to Congress. Sid, if you would like to go in any further detail, please feel free.
All I would say is that the evaluation components and the implementation components are kept separate within CMS. This is to support the independence of the evaluations. We will be working, have begun to work, and will continue to work with the evaluators as they design their evaluation.
Thank you, Sid. Mr. Putnam provides, one of the slides said, CA must have linkages to community providers. CMS should realize that a true frontier CA is the only healthcare provider in these, not small, but tiny communities. Thank you, Mr. Putnam, for this statement. CMS does understand that these communities have are many times the only provider in the community. However, we are hoping to we're interested in the shift of care from being more fragmented care, as provided by Paul Moore in the first demonstration, to more of a patient-centered care, one in which we were able to provide linkages to, say, distant site providers for the telemedicine piece, as well as having maybe home health agencies if you're interested in becoming part of the home health piece. I think that Paul would do a great job in explaining why we're looking for linkages. So I will forward this question to Paul. Paul?
Thank you, Steve. Larry, I appreciate your comment, because that brings us back home to the fact of the reality in many of these small communities. And it depends on the definition of community. When you're talking about taking care of the patients in your frontier community there, sometimes that's something that can be provided locally. Sometimes that's resource that is upstream that you need to get. I think the point being here to demonstrate these linkages is that the level of care that patient that you've been blessed with in your community needs will receive that level of care, and that's what's meant by linkages. For instance, I gave the example, if there is no home health agency local, and you know the nearest one is a long ways off, and there's some kind of contractual arrangements you can make with them to make sure that your patients receive the services that they need there in your local community, that would be considered a linkage. Linkage with upstream specialists in tertiary hospitals that provide maybe telemedicine oversight while they're there in your facility, that would be considered a linkage. It's what you do every day in your life, and that is take care of the patients with the resources that they need. It's a matter of having those resources at hand. Thanks for your reminding us what it's like in a frontier community. Stephen?
Thanks, Paul. Ms. Dixon asked, what is the approximate total number of CAs that will be selected for the project? We are estimating that we will accept between 15 to 20 participants in the demonstration. However, there is no preset number. It all depends on the quality and quantity of applications that we receive. Ms. Codwell provides, will there be information on how to report the project on the Medicare cost report? As Sid provided earlier, we are currently working with our colleagues in cost reporting to figure out all these slight nuances on reporting as well as budget neutrality in general. Please stay tuned for that for those who are participating in a particular demonstration. I think at this time, we thank you all for participating in this webinar number two. Please look for an updated FAQ list that shall be posted in the next couple of days. This presentation will also be made available on the FCHIP webpage within the next couple of days as well. Once again, if you need to reach me, please feel free to reach me at email at stephen.johnson@cms.hhs.gov with any more questions. As well, you can please email us at fchip@cms.hhs.gov. Thank you once again. Operator?
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.